Hello? Am I on? Welcome to the 88th best true crime podcast in Sweden. How's it going? How's things? If this is your first time listening to this podcast, please relax. Grab yourself a cup of tea. Listen with headphones if you can. Ideally, go back and listen to the trailer and the first two episodes just to get a feel for this podcast. You are not allowed to listen to this sped up. If you do that, I'll put a curse on you and you'll have bad luck for the whole week. This is a break from the intensity of some of the other true crime stuff that you're probably listening to or watching. We are in no rush here. Now back to Sweden. How the hell is this podcast number 88 in the true crime charts in Sweden? That has to be more than one person, right? Fess up. I want to know who you are. Email me, leave a review. I want to talk about Henrik Larsson, Zlatan Ibrahimovic, and Ragnar Lodbrok. People from Sweden are cool. I like Sweden. I like Swedish people. Do you know that Sweden was the last Scandinavian country to give up Norse religion? Not give up, but transition to Christianity on like a mainstream level. You stubborn bastards. I love it. And they definitely do not get the clout that they deserve for their involvement in the Viking era. They are very proud and very clued in to some of the old Norse and Viking history and heritage. And this podcast so far has been basically about Delphi. So I will be very interested to hear what any Swedish people have to say about all that. I can guess that they are horrified that Odin and all Norse religion has been bastardized by some racist groups over in the States and all over the world. So anyway, hello to my Swedish friends, and stop lurking. Let me know who you are and let me know if you know Henrik. I checked the stats on this podcast last night and there is over 200 people after listening to every episode so far. That's insane. I need to get a bigger bed. Can you imagine 200 people all into the same stuff in a pub? We'd have some crack. I hope I never lose my perspective on numbers and people. I don't think I will. Not gonna lie, there has been times where I slipped a bit, but I reel myself back in. Like, my YouTube channel is on nearly 20,000 subs. Insane. But then I look at other channels that have 70,000, 100,000, 500,000. And I'm like, oh my God, my channel is tiny. But it's not. It's just, I'm comparing myself to others. Like, when I picture 20,000 people, I picture a stadium that can hold 20,000 people. I've been in stadiums that have 20,000 people, and that's a lot of people. That's an army. But I do like having a small channel feeling. I'm more comfortable in a small crowd. Like yesterday, for example, on my channel, I did a live stream on the justice system in the States. And that stream was by far and away the lowest live viewers that I've ever had. Not surprised. I gave people no notice. And that topic is very boring for a YouTube algorithm audience. There was 20 of us in there. The peak viewers was 28. But I bored the ass off 8 people and they left. Or else they just came in for a quick nose. I do that too. So it was the lowest ever viewers for a video that I did. But do you know what? I loved it. It was just really nice chatting to people and getting to know them a bit better. I got completely carried away with the chat and I started yapping. And before I knew it, over 2 hours had passed. I also made loads of mistakes on that live stream. And it was my first one in months and months. My mic was randomly cutting out on 2 occasions. I was having a panic attack, but I plugged it out and plugged it back in and it started to work. I spent 25 minutes trying to pick out a nice chill background and I went with a fire. However, I barely even showed it for the whole live stream. I put up a slideshow and that was on the screen for about an hour and a half. But it was a lovely chat, just 20 of us having a good chat. And I never, ever want to lose my sense of perspective when it comes to that. I don't want to start chasing viewers for stats. Like, if I put Delphi in that live stream title yesterday, there would have been a couple of hundred people in there. But would I enjoy it? Would the other 20 people in there with me have enjoyed it? Or would they get drowned out? My focus is on finding my people and not chasing views or YouTube super chats. Super chats in general make me a bit uncomfortable. Not because I don't appreciate or want them, but because when you exist in the true crime world on YouTube, you coexist with a lot of grifters who chase money and will do whatever they can to get it. A lot of these people, I find, have no genuine interest in true crime. It's not authentic. They want to be YouTubers and they fell in to true crime because that's the only way they can get views and it's easier than the other places that they tried. And because of some of the tricks and tactics that they use to drive super chats into their channel, it makes me a bit uncomfortable when it comes to super chats on my channel. Some of the tactics that they use, they only show super chats on the screen, and a super chat on the off chance that anyone is listening to this and doesn't know what it is. It's when you send a chat on YouTube, but you pay to send it. So it comes up like highlighted and stuff. And say if you paid a 5 euro super chat to my channel, I think I get 60-70% of it and YouTube takes the rest. So people do it to support the channel, basically. But sometimes they do it because they have a question that they really want to be answered, or they have some information that they really want people to take note of. And some channels use tactics to drive these super chats. They won't show a chat on the screen unless there's money behind it. And then if someone gives a large super chat, they will talk about it for about 10 minutes and really encourage kind of more. So if they do a 2-3 hour live stream, 50% of that live stream is just them talking about super chats. So because of that and my dislike of some of the tactics that people use, I think I can come across as a bit blasé about super chats and super thanks on my channel. I never push them. People probably think I'm minted, but I'm not. And I will show loads of different comments on my screen. It doesn't matter if it's a super chat or not. When I do get one, I will always say thanks and show some love. But I find it hard to balance saying thanks and moving on. So if you are someone who has ever sent a super chat or a super thanks on my channel, please know I appreciate it. And every cent I make goes back into equipment or trying to make better content. I'm saying this because I do think I can come across as ungrateful sometimes, and that kills me. An example from yesterday, I got 2 super chats and I was thinking about them last night. They kept me awake a little bit. There was 2 people who sent super chats. Barbie Two Bits and We Are Dust are their 2 usernames. And I was like, oh my god, I acted a bit like a brat there. I acted a bit ungrateful. No, I haven't listened back to it to confirm that this is how it came across, but I just panic a bit and make silly comments. Barbie's Two Bits sent $20. A lot of money. And just before the live stream, because I didn't do one in months, I had to upgrade my StreamYard membership, and that cost $25. Well, I didn't have to, but I don't want the ugly logo on my screen, and I wanted to have a nice background, and you have to pay for that stuff. Plus, I think some of the added features makes the stream a little bit more enjoyable for the viewers. So that's why I use the membership one. But anyway, I paid $25 for a month's subscription, and that was the last dollars that I had seen before this super chat. I paid in dollars through my PayPal. My Patreon is on dollars as well. Listen, I live in a dollar world. I live in a dollar world now. So when Barbie sent in $20, it reminded me of the $25 that I just paid before the stream. So I was like, oh, thank you, appreciate that. And then I said, that will cover my StreamYard subscription. Which, fine, leave it there, move on. And then I said, fuck's sake. Nearly. Such an ungrateful thing to say. I didn't watch it back. But last night I was like, you ungrateful bastard. Someone gives you $20. That's nearly 3 hours work. If you're on minimum wage in the States, that's like $7. So $20 is like almost 3 hours work. And I responded with, that nearly covers my StreamYard subscription. Which sounds ungrateful. It does. It sounds like I'm saying, oh, give me another five there to cover it. I just really struggle with saying thanks for super chats and not coming across as I'm grifting. Because there's way too much grifting going on online in the true crime community. It's disgusting. People take advantage of vulnerable people. And it's not just from the usual types. I've seen grown-ass men who make in excess of $100,000 a year from really bad content, throwing temper tantrums if they don't get $300-$500 a night in super chats. They start berating their chat for not donating and crying that the highest chat is only $5-$10. Gary, I'm talking about you. It works though. It works. Gary makes more money in one night than I make in 12 months. And then he points the finger at everyone else. But he's doing exactly the same, if not worse, because he's sneaky about it. I'd love to go on a rant here about Gary has issues. But maybe I will. Maybe I will. Will I? It will get me in trouble. Probably. I'd love to vent because people think, for good reason, that I'm friends with this guy or that I like him. But any respect that I had there is out the window. Things happened. Things changed. My eyes got opened to a lot of things that I didn't know about. And I was willing to keep my mouth shut about it. But Gary left a very insulting comment on my channel. And I was like, do you know what? Fuck you. So I ran to Reddit and had a big bitch about him. I can't talk about it. I can't. It's silly drama and that will get me into trouble. I might, do you know what I'll do? I'll do a bonus episode on it because I'm due one. I want to do at least one a month. A bonus episode for Patreon members and people signed up to the secret podcast. That's what I'll do. I can vent in peace there. That's not public. That's my pay-per-view content. You need to sign up for that. You need to sign up for that drama. Look at me, grifting again. Anyway, where the heck was I? Why am I talking about grifters? Oh yeah, my live stream and super chats. Barbie's Two Bits, thank you for the $20 if you are listening. And We Are Dust, thank you for the £5. Please know I am very grateful, even if it didn't come across that way. I really enjoyed that live stream and chatting yesterday. I was able to keep up with the chat. Sometimes I can't, because I look at a question And I'll be like, I don't have anything to say about that. But then I'll talk about it for 20 minutes and go on 7 different tangents. And then I'm miles behind in the chat. I am murder for going on tangents on live streams. And I end up talking about stuff I wasn't expecting to talk about. And sometimes afterwards I'm like, oh, I didn't really explain myself well there. I could say anything on a live stream. I have to be careful about my tangents, which is why I don't do them often. But anyway, one of those tangents I went on yesterday was talking about kids in true crime. And that's what I want to talk about on this podcast. And maybe explain it a bit better, because I don't think I did a very good job yesterday. I was jumping from one case to another, from one tangent to another, and it was all a bit muddy. I said in the first episode of this podcast how my love for true crime comes from a love of mysteries, a maths problem, a broken timeline. But that isn't something that I was always aware of. That realization only came to me the last few months, when I really thought about, why am I into true crime? I was like, how did I first get hooked? What kind of crimes did I follow? What books did I read? And what naturally drags me in? And when I gave it some proper thought, it's very obvious, it's mysteries. And that's how a lot of child cases start off. Summer Wells was the first case that I was talking about on YouTube, and it was the timeline that dragged me into that case. I should probably do a separate podcast on Summer Wells, because the last video I did on that case on my channel was over a year ago, I think. I must check, but it was a long time ago. And that video was about suspects in the case. I made a few videos to kind of close out my thoughts on the case, and that was my top 5 suspects. Something which I probably would not do in another case going forward. It just feels very harsh to be naming at least 3 people who aren't involved, maybe 5. But one of those videos I didn't release, and a few people have realised that, and they know who it's about. I have good reason for that, and I will explain it to you eventually, I promise. That case is so toxic and so sad. It still is a mystery, but I don't want to talk about it like I used to talk about it anymore. And the reason I was giving so much thought to what drags me into true crime cases, naturally, was because I want to make natural, authentic content. Stuff that I want to talk about, because there has been times where I have made videos about stuff that I don't really want to talk about, especially in public. And what I learned about myself was, if there is no mystery, or if it's obvious what happened, I don't enjoy making videos about it. And I can give you a good example here of a video I did when there was no mystery behind it. Little girl called Camarie Holland. Kamarie. A horrific case. The guy that did that actually was found guilty last week, and he's going to be getting the death penalty. Good. I hope it comes soon, because he's a monster. But if you listen to that video, it was a while back. I am talking so fast, way too fast, even for me. It's very intense. I basically jammed the whole story into like a 10-minute video, probably less, I can't remember. The reason I did that is the case is vile, and I wanted to get her over as fast as possible when I was recording the video and talking about it. So I was just talking really fast. I was like, get this over with. But There was no mystery there. We knew what happened. And if something similar to that case happens today, I'm not sure if I want to make a video about it. I really don't enjoy consuming all the details. Reading court documents is different. If I'm making a video, I'm going to consume every detail I can. I'm going to read police reports, court docs, first-hand witness accounts. I want everything. But that's not good for my mental health, because some of these cases involving kids are horrific and you get sent to a dark place very fast. So I'm being extremely careful about what cases I cover these days. I almost got sucked into making a video about Sebastian Rogers. Sebastian Rogers is an autistic kid who I believe is in the water somewhere. I ran away from that case fast because it turned so toxic so fast, and I don't want to contribute to that and make videos about it, no matter how many views or subs or super chats I'll get. But I am still keeping my eye out on that case, because it's kind of a mystery. If he's not in the water, where is he? But the problem with a lot of cases is, especially in the last couple of years, technology has come on leaps and bounds when it comes to finding bodies in water. But I don't believe that many police departments and agencies have caught up. I don't think they have the proper resources, the proper funding to find people in water like they should. And that's why you see people popping up on YouTube. Groups of people who go out and find missing people, and then they're supported by people online. People donate monthly because they're like, this is fantastic work. This is brilliant what you're doing for families, and I want to help. And that's great. I love that stuff. But the problem is, some of these groups are scumbags, and they're just doing it for money. And even though they do help families, they also take advantage of them. They use videos of them crying in promo videos. Disgusting. Look at Adventures with Purpose and see what happened with them. I made a video on that when things started to go downhill there. I seen that coming a mile away. I got huge backlash when I made a video calling them out on some of the stuff that they were doing. But look at them now. Where are they now? But they were making so much money that it encouraged loads of more to start doing the same. But that's bullshit, because the police and state agencies should be the ones doing this. They should have people dedicated to finding people in water, and they should have the best, most up-to-date technology available. But they don't, because I don't think they have the funding for it. But I'm very careful about what cases I follow these days, especially when it comes to kids. I just have to put myself first and be careful with cases that involve toddlers and kids, because otherwise I'll disappear. I won't be able to talk about anything at all. And some of these cases turn me in, I'm not joking, they turn me into a psycho. And when the mystery disappears, I don't enjoy researching them or making videos about them. Mystery wise, that's not just with child cases. Idaho 4, Brian Koberger. Some people have made a living off making Idaho 4 videos since that happened. One Weasel has about 1,000 videos on it because it brings in money. I was chatting about that case. I made videos about that case that were getting lots of views. But as soon as I read the PCA and seen the evidence, the mystery is gone. So I stopped making videos on it, because I think it's very clear what happened there. Another case in Idaho that I haven't made much videos on lately is little Michael Vaughan, a little chap very close to my heart. I got sucked into that case big time because of the mystery. I was wrong about that case because I was convinced for a long time that he was snatched and taken completely out of that neighbourhood, of that town. But I was wrong. But I was sucked into that case for the mystery, and also because I was absolutely sickened at some of the videos and the treatment that was done to his mother, Brandy, online by vile weasels. I made lots of videos on Michael Vaughan and with the help of my channel members and Patreon members, we made a little website for him and his family. That's still up now. We still pay for that. That's another example of live streams that I was doing on the channel that had very, very few viewers. Half of them were hate watching because they hated that I supported the family. But the other half were really interested and invested like me. And we wanted to help. We wanted to just do anything we could to help. So we made posters. We made flyers. We made a website so that they could have everything together. Just little things. His mother, Brandy, she basically sacrificed herself for help in finding her little boy. She was stabbed in the back by friends, by people she thought were friends, and people she thought cared about her and cared about her family. They didn't. They were just looking for attention. And that's still happening with Brandy online. She still gets weasels making videos about her. Absolutely insane people. But the hope that Brandy had of finding her little boy alive was infectious. And it got to me. I was like, you know what? I know what the stats say. But so what? Miracles happen. Why can't he be one of them? I was all in on him being found alive. And then the worst thing that could have happened, happened. People were arrested and police said that Michael was killed and buried in a backyard and then later moved. So instead of being found alive, he wasn't found at all. And they took away the hope. The hope of Michael being found alive was snatched from everyone. They have no body, but they are fully confident that he is dead. Like, how can a family process that? How can they grieve for their child when they don't even have his body? They can't. There is no way that they can. And what they are going through is unimaginable. And it's a torture. They're being tortured. Can you imagine going through that and just trying to put one foot in front of each other every day? I can't. I can't imagine what the family is going through. Because when that news came out, it broke me a little. I never really told people how much, and I won't either, because who cares? I didn't even know this kid. Can you imagine his family and how they feel? I was in complete denial privately when they announced that they had suspects in the case and they believe he is dead. I blamed the cadaver dogs. For the first time in my life, I turned on cadaver dogs, and I love cadaver dogs. I love all dogs involved in true crime. I love all dogs anyway. I was like, maybe the dog is wrong. Maybe he's sick. How do we know? How do we know he's a good one? Then I found out there was two dogs. And I was trying to find out, were they from the same kennel? Because I was like, it might be a kennel sickness. Maybe there's something wrong with the trainer. Maybe there was something in the trailer when they were transporting them. But then I found out it was three separate dogs. I was like, oh my God, he's dead. that's when it really sunk. When it wasn't until I found out that there was a number of dogs alerted in the backyard to say that a body was buried in the spot that one of the suspects said it was. One of the suspects, Stacey Wandra, he was in prison at the time, and he said that Michael was buried there. Sickening. What I think happened is Sandra, his wife, the dirty bitch, either alone or with one or two other people, there's four suspects in total in this case, moved Michael's body, because when Stacey got arrested and was in jail in prison, they knew he was going to talk, so they moved Michael's body. And since then, I've made very few videos on Michael, even though it's been way more popular online. Imagine that. This case is way more popular when they announced that he's dead. Why didn't all these people care when we thought he was alive? They were nowhere to be seen. But all of a sudden, oh, a dead kid, drama. We'll talk about that now. But again, with that case, the mystery is kind of gone. The case has moved from being a mystery to being all about the pure, disgusting, shameful disrespect of a child's body. And where is that body now? Where did they dump him? And that infuriates me. That's all I care about in this case right now. I don't really care about charges, even though apparently the grand jury met a few weeks back, but I haven't heard any update on that. But what I really, really want is just Michael's body to be found, just so his poor family and the Fruitland community can have a funeral and grieve for this little boy. I've really struggled with this case since then. I made one video speculating on what Sandra did with him, but I have since put that video on private because I don't like what I was talking about in that video. What I was talking about was how I was worried about, like, sometimes the laziest option is also the best. And if Sandra threw poor Michael into her wheelie bin, he might never be found. Dumps, landfills are the worst. They're the worst. But I took that video down because I hate the thought of that happening. And I worry about people who know Michael listening to me say that. I know they've probably gone there already in their head, but if they haven't, I don't want me to be putting that in their head. And I also don't like talking about how chucking a little body in a bin is probably one of the best ways for it not to be found. People outside of true crime, they don't realise that. And I hope they never ever do, because everybody will be throwing bodies in bins then. Like, is there anything worse than someone throwing a child's body into a bin? Quentin Simon, another case involving a child where I lost my head in a video. His mother, Lelani, the cunt. What a cunt. I don't use that word often, rarely, but she's a cunt. She beat her child to death with an object, drove down the road a mile away and chucked his body into a bag and threw him into a bin. She then goes crying to the news and newspapers and goes out drinking, out partying. And you should see this little kid. He's adorable. She would have gotten away with it. She would have probably gotten away with this if they didn't find him in the landfill. A team of people were out searching that landfill for days. Nightmare. What a nightmare. Like, imagine for your Sunday dinner, you had a leg of lamb and you ate all the meat off it and you threw that leg into the bin. And then I come to you 2 weeks later and I say, go to the dump there and find that bone, find that leg. What chance? do you think you have a find in that? And some places, they don't have the resources to send out a team of people to go through landfills. A lot depends on the landfill as well and how organised they are about where certain trucks dump their rubbish and how they compress that rubbish. But they found Quentin, thank God they found him. Those people who were out searching, absolute heroes, every single one of them, fair play. I don't know if I could do that. I don't know if I could search through rubbish knowing that any second I could come across a battered, bruised, decaying body of a little boy, of a little child. But someone did. Someone in that search team found him. Can you imagine that sight, that smell, the sight? Fair play to them, whoever they are. You are a hero for doing what you did. I don't know, could I do it? I really don't. Abuse on toddlers is like kryptonite to me. One case I nearly talked about this year was a case involving a little girl named Harmony Montgomery. And like Michael Vaughan, her body has never been found. But there was a lot of evidence that her dad, Adam Montgomery, the scumbag, killed her. He had a trial and has since been convicted. But I had to turn off that trial. I was going to make a video about it. So I was watching the trial, taking notes. I already read all the court documents, so I knew what was coming. But when her stepmother was on the stand and she was talking about a beating that Adam gave Harmony in the car, and she talked about Harmony folding over, I had to turn her off. I had to stop watching because my blood was boiling and I couldn't continue to watch. But I do fully support and understand anyone who is invested in that case and who watched every second of it. You deserve to know what happened and you deserve to know the reality of the situation and you deserve to see justice play out, however upsetting and frustrating that might be. You do you. Everyone is different and everyone deals with these things differently. And I promise there is things I can stomach that some people watching trials like Harmony Montgomery, they couldn't. Everyone's different. Like, I have zero issues with basically everything else when it comes to true crime. Crime scene photos, videos of homicides. I could and have gone to sleep listening to coroners going over autopsy reports in court. That stuff doesn't faze me at all. I'm also not going to be one of those people who I find very annoying. People who tell people who don't have a daughter or don't have kids Harmony's age that, well, you don't understand like I do. It affects me more than you because I have a kid that age. Absolute bullshit. That makes no difference. We're all human. We were all kids. We all know kids. But I'm also not going to pretend that because I have a true crime channel that I'm immune to this stuff. I'm not. Far from it. I just love the mystery side of true crime. When there's a maths problem, when there's a broken timeline, and I struggle, really struggle, with abuse on kids for loads of different reasons. And what sickens me about some of these cases, Summer Wells, Michael Vaughan, Harmony Montgomery, like, those poor babies are always going to have a disrespect hanging over them until they are found. Like, where are they? In a ditch? In a woods? In a river? In a dump? They're always going to have a disrespect hanging over them until they are found, until they can get a proper burial, a proper funeral, a proper send-off. And these cases, they also turn me in to a pure psychopath. Like, you guys don't understand. I fantasize about seeing people that hurt them getting hurt themselves. Let me tell you about it. Let me tell you about my movie idea. I've told no one about this yet. You're the first to hear about my movie idea. I fantasize about it all the time. When I turned off Harmony Montgomery's trial, I went for a walk because I was raging. And on that walk, I had no headphones, no Rocco, no music. I was in my head, in my own little world, playing this movie out. So a little background first. Despite my ability to deal with crime scene photographs and autopsy reports, I have a pretty weak stomach. Weak enough, I will get sick at the mere sight or sound of another person getting sick. If I have to throw a rubbish bag into a really smelly wheelie bin, I will start empty retching. As soon as I approach the bin, when I open the bin, I'm sweating and panicking and coughing. When I throw the bag into the bin, I run away as fast as I can. I get the job done, don't judge me. But I have a weak stomach. I don't like seeing people in pain. What lunatic does, nobody does. But if you offered me the chance to go into a room and watch Adam Montgomery get tortured, everything changes in a flash. I would jump at that chance. I'd be fine with it. I'd be totally fine. Honestly, this sounds psychotic. I think I would enjoy it. Maybe I'd even get involved. There'd be no empty retching, no emotion. I would just be a pure psychopath. Hand me that drill. If he was being executed by electric chair and with a dry sponge like Shawshank, sign me up, front row. My stomach would be absolutely fine. And I'd actually really enjoy it, I think. I would have popcorn in one hand and a pitcher of Harmony in another. I know exactly what I'm doing, because I've thought about this a lot. I fantasize about this stuff. And I would love to watch that dirty coward fry for what he did to that little girl. I would inhale those fumes coming off him. I'd suck it in like a pure psycho. I would turn into a psycho. And I fantasize about this torture becoming a reality for people like Adam Montgomery. I went for a walk after turning off that trial because I was raging, and that's all I was thinking about as I was walking. I was in my own little world playing out this movie in my head. The movie goes like this, okay? Listen up now. Do you know the way I was talking about adventures with purpose? People who work to find missing people, but they make a lot of money online because people sign up to give them donations monthly, just a fiver a month, price of a pint a month. Here you go. I love the work you're doing. Please do more. What if that existed, but it wasn't people searching for missing people? It was a little vigilante group that works with the police on the sly, is funded by the internet, and goes in to definitely guilty people. They have to be, we have to know they're guilty, and tortures them. I don't care. I don't care what you do. But your job is to get the truth, get answers out of them to where the missing person or kid is. Like, I don't care. Does anyone care what they do? If they get results, need to take a finger? Want to take a pinky or a toe? No problem. Work away. Take several. I don't give a shit how many fingers you take off these people. Do whatever you need to do to get answers, to find the missing person, the missing kid, the missing body. It sounds crazy. It sounds crazy. But don't brush it aside. If they can get away with Guantanamo Bay, they can definitely do this, like. So that's my movie idea. But I wanted to go one step further. I want the movie to be so successful that it inspires real life copycats. Maybe I should start a book before the movie, and then the book inspires a movie, and then the movie inspires real life copycats. If anybody is listening and wants to write that book, please work away. Maybe this podcast will inspire a book, and the book will inspire a movie, and the movie will inspire real life copycats. If that happens, I'm going to delete this episode. I don't want it being dragged back to me. But imagine, seriously no. Can you imagine how fast the likes of Adam, Stacey, Sarah, Kegan Klein, imagine how fast he talk. Larry Millier, I talked about that case on my channel a little bit. He killed his wife, definitely did it. They never found her. He went on a really long car journey the next day after he killed her, left his phone at home, brought the little kid along. So imagine that little kid for the rest of his life knowing that he was in the car when his dad dumped his mother's body. Can you imagine if you get a deja vu in a location and you're like, is this where my mom is buried? But all those people, all those pigs would squeal fast. Mia Millier found. Michael Vaughn found. Harmony Montgomery found. Kegan Klein tells the truth for the first time in his life. I'm not sure about Summer Wells because I wouldn't be sure who to target in that case. And that's where we run into problems with this. We need to be sure. But if we do know, fuck them. I want the people who love and cared for the person or child that is missing to find their body. They might never get full justice, but at least they will be able to have a funeral and to start grieving some bit. And that's where I want the focus of my movie, this little vigilante group, to be focused on. I want them to be focused on finding out where these scumbags put the bodies, because we know they did it. Hand them over to this group for whatever, a couple of hours, and they'll get them to talk. As long as they get results, I don't give a shit what they do. What do you think? Would you watch that movie? If there was a group like that, that got results, if they were getting results online, would you support them financially? Something small, a few dollars a month. Like, I definitely would. Take my money, sign me up. As long as they definitely are guilty and you get results, I don't care. I think it'd be a fantastic movie. That's my secret plan. If we can get this podcast to inspire a book and that book to inspire a movie, and then I want real life copycats who bump into people like Adam Montgomery and do whatever they need to do, and a few hours later they find Harmony's body. Same with Michael, same with Larry Millier. Not sure about Kegan Klein, what kind of information we get, but he's lied so much, just give him one bash. I'm telling you, these people would talk so fast if they had any bit of physical discomfort. And, like, it doesn't even need to be that violent, because once everybody knows about this group, they're going to talk straight away. They'll start talking before they do anything to them. The police could use it as a interrogation tactic. Just be like, no bother, we'll let you go there and this group will pick you up and have a chat. Don't rule her out. Do not shit on my movie. I think it's a fantastic idea. And it's how I cope with cases involving kids. I fantasize about this movie being made, and I fantasize about people getting answers. So that's it. That's my secret. I'm a complete psychopath, and I apologize, but I can't help it. And on that note, I should probably wrap up here for this week. If you enjoy this podcast, if you enjoy my content, please consider supporting me on Patreon or YouTube membership, or if you could give this podcast a rating, that would be amazing. If you were going to rate it anything less than 5 stars, don't bother. I've already lost my 5-star rating on Spotify. Somebody listened to multiple episodes and then gave me a rating of 1. Oh, the dedication of some people is impressive. If you have a friend who might be interested in this podcast or my YouTube channel, please tell them. Tell them to check it out. Probably won't like it, but tell them anyway. And that's it. I'll leave it there. If anyone wants to write that book, let me know. I have loads of ideas. Good luck. God bless. I hope everyone has a good week.
See?